most successful individuals with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, a couple minutes in, and a real quick rundown for those of you that that don't have the recipe at hand. Some people seem to lose the recipe every single year, but if you don't have Twitter and you don't have Facebook, here's how you make Blues crab cakes. It's a pound. Get the jumbo lump. Yes, it's going to cost you a fortune, but the jumbo lump, and then you are going to take a tablespoon of brown mustard, Gouldens, ideally, and three tablespoons of mayo and a beaten egg. Right, you're going to mix that up on the side. Go back to the crab. You're going to take, he mentioned, you know, Blue mentioned the spicing. Montreal steak spice. Just good old-fashioned Montreal steak spice. McCormick has a Montreal blend. Use that. It's coarse, and it impacts flavor. You put on as much as you like. It's got garlic in there. It's got the coarse salt and the pepper. Flake up the, you know, spread around that steak spice on the crab. Then add the egg mayo mustard mix. By hand, you're gonna just lightly spread that liquid. Basically, it's a carrying agent and a coagulant to hold the lump meat together. Give it a light fluffing, essentially. Spread it around lightly. You don't want to break up the crab meat. And then finally, the Keebler Club crackers. I don't know if you've noticed this, by the way, but Keebler sold to Kellogg's. So I can see that they're tinkering with the what they've done with the elves. I can't tell you, but up there in Battle Creek, they've obviously got them somewhere, and we'll see where they deploy them. But you take a sleeve. There's three sleeves in a box. It always makes me laugh. There's three sleeves of the Keebler crackers, of the club crackers. You take four crackers off the sleeve. Take there's maybe, I don't know, 32 of them. So you take four out. That's the way Blue originally explained it. And then you crush up those crackers, then add that to the crab meat. And again, mix it lightly. The moisture from the egg and the mayo and the mustard is going to soften the crab, crackers, and that holds everything together. It makes basically five or six crab cakes, depending on how big you like them. And you can do anything. I do them in the broiler, under the broiler. You can fry them in butter. You know, you can even bake them, but typically for me, broil is the way to go. So there they are, and refrigerate them. You can't immediately cook them the second you finish mixing. You put them back in the Frigidaire. We love when Blue says Frigidaire, and they'll firm up. They'll get nice, you know, half an hour or a couple of hours, and then you cook them. They're the best you ever ate crab cakes from Leon Blushewitz, and of course served at the Prime Rib for many, many years. Sid Fernando, good morning.
Good morning. I was great listening to that recipe. I was really surprised you don't have, it wasn't Old Bay that was used in them.
No Old Bay.
I'm going to have to try that.
Oh, they're great. I make them probably half a dozen times a year. It's so funny because what happens is we make them around this time of year for Tina, and you know her birthday's in July, so a lot of times if I ask her, what do you want me to make, and she'll say, make crab cakes. So I'll make them then, and you know probably about every 2 to 3 months, she says, I said, what do you want for dinner? And she'll say, make the crab cakes. So once you start making them, you'll go back to it. And it's easy. Of course, now it's expensive.
Yeah. Wow, interesting.
He's so much fun. It's unbelievable. 91 years old. And I guess it made it sound like I guess his body's giving him a little trouble. But still sharp and amazing. And he has seen so much of the game's history.
Yeah, really terrific business.
Always. Well, we talked, Sid, after the Derby, and then after not long after we spoke last Wednesday, the word came the Derby winner wasn't participating here. So I haven't asked you your thoughts and you know how significant it is and how disconcerting it is for the game at large.
I don't know personally about the game at large, Steve, but you know, I think you know anybody wants to, especially a horse like that, wants to skip the Preakness. I mean, it's it's their prerogative, and it's just funny how there's so much talk now because of that about, you know, spacing the races more. But I don't really have a big issue with somebody, skipping the race. I mean, you know, I've been watching this race for so many years and I've seen it happen, and it's, Gato del Sol, right?
Yeah.
Because they figured his running style was more suited to the Belmont. You're going to spend a buck left to chase more money, which, you know, had an effect on the Triple Crown. Actually, it inspired them to make that bonus after the spend a buck year. It's just a choice of the connections, really.
From a value standpoint for him, and you touched on it last week, and you were widely quoted.
I was.
People mentioned it because that there was that thread where I explained that I think it was Dave Goodfriend had asked, you know, what do you think a horse like this is worth after the Derby win? And then I mentioned that you were coming on, and then, you know, several people said, you know, Sid thinks, you know, $1.5 million or so.
Right.
And so it went out there into the, you know, into the netherworld and for perusal.
Right.
I mean, if a horse like that comes right back and gets beat, I mean, it didn't mean as much with Mind That Bird because he was a gelding, and so he was going to run based on, you know, whatever opportunities. Different story, but this, you know, this is they're going to want to craft a stallion contract out of him. So, you know, in terms of picking spots and honing the resume, I don't know if he's. I mean, is he devalued if he comes here and loses, per se? I mean, I just.
No, not really. But, the price I gave was based on, you know, if he'd only just won the Derby and then he was retired, you know, not as a saleable horse, but still racing in him. you know, the biggest value that he has right now as a potential, you know, racehorse, you can earn that money, obviously, and have the potential for it. And just to make it clear, my value was just based on if he stopped running right now and that's all he had on his resume.
Right.
You know, I just gave the what you could expect to get in stud fees for him versus, you know, that's going to be the basis of what you or anybody's going to offer to, you know, to buy the horse here. And then I pointed out in Japan, it's probably going to be more. But he's still got racing value in him, so that's a different valuation altogether. And to answer your question, no, if he came here and lost, no. You know, he's the type of horse that people expect. He's the type that is not expected to win consistently. And, you know, he's going to pick get spots. Sort of like Keen Ice and Sire. I mean, Sire only won 3 out of 24 starts. He plays a lot, but, you know, these horses are pace and trouble and compromised and frequently in races that are too short for them. The only reason I would have come to this race is because, you know, most races, you're looking at 9 furlongs, and if you can get races that are over that, you know, 1.63, 1.25, 1.5, those are the exceptional races that, you know, your horse is probably more suited for than 9 furlongs or 1.16. So, you know, based on that, you know, I really don't understand why these guys backed out of it. That's what I don't know. Do you have any idea why?
Other than Rick Dawson, you know, citing that time between races, he shocked me, to be honest. When he said last Tuesday that, you know, they're going to wait and see, and I think I said to him, I said, Rick, you're saying that there's a real chance you're not running? I was taken aback. I mean, especially because the day before, and certainly on Sunday, given that Eric Reed had you know, cited all the positives, I mean, that he had eaten up, which is in fact, Blue even mentioned that. He said, when your horse, if he didn't leave food in the bucket on Saturday night, if he had an appetite, you know, that coming out of the race that night, that's a very positive sign. And I don't know. I mean, they're showing clips of him galloping at Mercury.
Yeah.
He looks great. He looks good. I mean, I don't know. I at first I thought, all right, so be it. It's not a, you know, it's not the worst thing that's happened in history. But you know, looking at this race again, Saturday, it doesn't feel like. And even if he was going to be third choice or fourth choice, I kind of am sort of reconsidered. I kind of wish that they hadn't done this. And Blue, you know, Blue actually sounded off on that topic too. So anyway, he's not here. Let's talk about who is here. And obviously, you know, the Derby runners are established. Sid, let's talk about a couple of horses that haven't had as much discussion. I did have Kenny McPeak specifically to talk about Creative Minister, and this is a creative cause that, out of a Tappet mare, feels like he should relish the 1.63.
Yeah, lightly raised horse, you know, and Kenny McPeak is never shy to take shots with horses, but you can give him that. You know, coming off that last race, you know, he's certainly, you know, he got that good speed figure in the last race, and, you know, improving horse. Creative Cause, of course, stands at Airdrie, and you know, has done well, and he's the type of horse, you know, Steve, he's the type of horse that if you had one, you'd want to take a shot into the race, right? And so I think he's got a I personally am not picking him, but I can see why they would want to try him in this race, especially with the way come together with the premise early on anyway was that all these colts were just, there was never ever a standout here among the colts to begin with, and the usually powerful California contingent fizzled, and so the Colts landscape is, very much anybody's game, and though Epicenter has been, emerged as the best so far, it's not like he's, done anything that's American Pharoah like, or even in the Derby, and it makes sense to take a shot to beat him.
Great. We've certainly had the conversations going back to the Wood with and actually the Withers win with early voting. Happy Jack has come up a little bit in conversation going into the Derby. Talk about the other two unknowns, Armagnac, who you might have some familiarity with, the Quality Road Colt for SF, and then Skippy Longstocking, an exaggerator out of a War Chant mare for Safi Joseph, who, upon closer inspection, is actually more competitive in this field than I expected when I started looking at numbers.
Well, I want to mention one horse first who I do like before getting to them. If you look at the profile of early voting, it's very similar to that of cloud computing.
Right.
In fact, it's better. It's a better record. But both horses trained by Chad Brown for Clarovich Stables. Both horses entered the Preakness as their fourth race. Both were kind of based in New York route. Both, won their maiden at Aqueduct, I think, first time out. Then this horse, early voting, won the Withers at a mile and an eighth, and then just got nailed in the Wood. Cloud Computing, I think it was the Gotham that he went into instead of the Withers, placed in that. Then he went in the Wood, placed in that. And then he came to the Preakness and, beat a pretty good horse in Classic Empire, right? So I think there's a very similar way that Chad Brown has brought these two horses, except I think early voting is a better horse than Cloud Computing. And he certainly got a better pedigree. He's from the family of Spikestown. And he's by Gunrunner, who's really been dominating as with his first crop. He was a leading first crop stallion last year. And with that in mind, I'll just spit my picks out. I like him, early voting, and the Philly Secret Oath. Both, obviously first crop sires as well. Now, to get to the horses that you just mentioned, Armagnac has been part of that Southern California group for SF. He got his head handed to him against Taba and Messier in the Santa Anita Derby. He came back, obviously, and won that allowance race the other day. But prior to that, prior to the Santa Anita Derby, he got drubbed in the San Felipe to Forbidden Kingdom. It seems like he's been the fifth string of SF Bloodstock. And obviously, great breeding. He's by Quality Road, out of a Lemon Drop kid mare, who was bred by Arthur Hancock Stone Farm. Stone also had bred the other Quality Road, Blackadder, to the same group. By Quality Road, bred by Stone. So it's kind of interesting. And this horse, you know, given what we're seeing out of the California thing, doesn't appeal to me. And in those terms, you can kind of throw a Happy Jack, who's been, you know, our mutual friend Chuck Simonson, you know, ranting about how poor California form has been all year, and you know, it looks like he's correct. Skippy Longstocking, the other one you just mentioned, Exaggerator, Son of Curlin, Exaggerator won the trade, the Preakness. This horse, you know, he ran behind early voting in the wood, didn't he? Yeah, he did. He was third to Mo Donegal in early voting in the wood. You know, his last few races have been pretty good. He did show that he can take a lot of training. Talking about what Blue said, you know, he's probably run more than anybody else in the field, I think, with 9 starts, and perhaps he's got that feel if you're looking, you know, that for a situation where this, you know, these horses, you know, take turns beating each other, why not him? He's going to give you odds.
Yeah, I can tell you from a fig standpoint. Mentioned at the top of the show that the Thoroughgraph numbers for the weekend for Pimlico are available, and he is right in line with, you know, with many of the contenders that you know, that people are considering at much shorter prices, and I was kind of surprised actually at you know, because he's one of these horses that's been kind of out of sight, out of mind since the wood. So
yeah.
his name kept showing up as a consideration for something, and then then he shows up here. So and stylistically, I don't know. He's sort of a mid back stalk and go type, and that certainly suits. Junior Alvarado seems to get along fine with him. He's coming off of 2 mile and an eighth races. I was shocked that I was forced to have to look at him as a consideration for something underneath, maybe. But I said to Blue,
mile and an eighth races have been his two best races, and those were his two last races.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that gets us, I suppose, to your final decisions.
I think I'm gonna my two picks in this race, again, to try to beat Epicenter, as I like to try to do with any favorite in the race. It's early voting in Secret Oak. I mean, Secret Oak could be any kind, could be any as good as the fillies we've seen in this race have beaten, you know, some pretty tough colts in the past. And this early voting just seems to me to just been really primed for this race. I love the pedigree, too. He's by Gunrunner from the family of Spicetown. And I just think, Steve, that Gunrunner is such a good stallion and that he's going to get a first-class classic winner.
Well, this will certainly be a good opportunity. It is interesting. It's just occurring to me that you've got 1, 2, 3 of the 9 in here. Our sons, you got 3 sons in here of Preakness winners. Happy Jack by Oxbow, Skippy Longstocking by Exaggerator, and Fenwick by Curlin.
Yeah.
And there's no other stallion in this race that won a classic.
Oh, wow.
There's 2 Not This Times, a Creative Cause, an Arrogate, the Gunrunner, as talked about, early voting, and Quality Road. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, there's another wacky factoid. And everybody's hanging their hat, Sid, on the fact that traditionally runners up in the Derby have not particularly fared well here. And I just saw Chris Larmy pushing the 1-for-15 over a certain period with Exaggerator as the, you know, as the lone success. But I don't know how relevant those. I mean, what, Curlin was third, right, in the Derby, and turns around and wins. I mean, why does being second in the Derby? Why is that necessarily the, you know, some sort of special distinction?
Yeah, and Epicenter is a very good horse, you know.
Yeah,
it's just that prior to the Derby, everybody was, you know, talking about how good the fillies were versus the colts. You know, you had that great group of fillies in the Oaks, and you know the right filly, you know, the filly we most of us thought was the best won that race, and she won it quite stylishly. And you know, it's like you said, and Blue pointed out, I love the fact that Wayne Lucas, you know, he could survive that program. I mean, that came back with that 59 bullet and then a reel back with the 6 furlongs and 113, ran that great race. And, you know, she made a really spectacular move after a bad break in the Arkansas Derby, too, which kind of got hidden because she didn't win. And
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, she could, you know, who's to say she's not going to turn into like a Rachel Alexander or something, you know?
I was talking to Andy this morning, and Andy, we were debating Secret Oath and how to, you know, how to evaluate her in this spot now. And Andy brought up that the Arkansas Derby, that if you view it as a whole, that, you know, those that said it wasn't that strong of a race going into the Kentucky Derby, you were pretty well borne out. I mean, obviously Cyberknife's race, you know, chasing the pace, and Barber Road, you know, did what the best he could do, and you know, among the closers, he was only what, I guess he was the fourth best of the horses that closed. So Andy's concern is that the Arkansas Derby just is not holding up, and or that people that were against the Arkansas Derby going into Kentucky, that they were basically borne out, and you know, Secret Oath notwithstanding, and her performance in the Oaks. So that was the element that he brought to a discussion that we had this morning, he and I. I don't know.
It's an element. Relevant.
Yeah.
Same could be said for California for him, though.
Yep. You know? Agreed. And the fact that, well, and I mean, Armagnac, I guess Armagnac still qualifies as, I mean, he, yeah, I mean, he came out of that Santa Anita Derby. He did look good. I watched the replay. That was a good effort in the allowance. There's no denying that was a nice effort.
Yeah. It's, you know, but it's a big group that owns it. They're, you know, they're stacked deep with 3-year-olds, and why not run him after a win like that, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Well, listen, Kenny McPeak's doing the same thing.
And McPeak does it all the time, too, you know?
And has had good luck with it.
Yeah, I do like your comments about Sano's horse. I mean, that horse is hickory in these days, you know, keeps throwing in good performances. So, you know he's going to be around. And it really all, it's looking like, you know, either they're all going to be about the same level or somebody's going to just jump out. Or you're going to get like a Rich Strike situation with your Skippy.
And it's funny you say that, because a case, I suppose, could be made. You could put together the four horses that have that have run the most. Simplification, Secret Oath, Epicenter, and Skippy Longstocking. 8, 8, 7, and 9 starts.
Right.
There's your angle. Well, Sid, as always, I appreciate it, and we'll have the middle leg of the crown to recap next week.
All right. And are you going to be there?
I'm here. Yeah, I'm here. I'm staying here.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Wouldn't miss this.
Enjoy the seafood and the crab cake.
And the pit beef. Don't leave out the pit beef, Pioneer pit beef.
I've enjoyed the photos that you've been running up here.
I love it.
Including that icy, that orange icy drink. What was it?
It's a snowball.
Snowball man used to come out all the time back then.
Well, this it's got a very distinct history. There's a couple of places, New Orleans and Baltimore, for whatever reason. But in Baltimore, from the Depression, and of course it was a very inexpensive, just ice, shaved ice, and a fruit syrup, and they were like a nickel apparently, going back, and it survived. The culture of it survived here, and there's snowball shops all over town. The one in Catonsville. Tasty Zone is just great, and I love it. I don't like it with there's a school of thought and a certain number of people that have it with marshmallow either in the center or poured on top. I love marshmallow, but that part I don't get, because the marshmallow freezes, and so it becomes like a chewy, I don't know, like a weird icy shell of mom. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I just like the ice.
Me too.
I like the ice with the colors on it. And your face and your tongue would get all those colors.
Exactly. I always, do you remember a scene? Were you a Kojak fan?
Yeah, very big Kojak fan.
For whatever reason, there's a scene from a Kojak that sticks in my head, where there's one of those ice guys on the streets of New York. I don't think they do this anymore. They'd have the block of ice and they would shave, and he orders one, and he says to the guy, "No booze." And they used to have rum, for adults they would add rum to the snow cone, and Savalas takes a lick. And he throws it at the guy, and he said, "I told you no booze." that scene sticks in my head whenever I go have a snowball here in Baltimore.
Yeah, that's funny.
In fact, I got a great picture I'll put up of Telly Savalas right here at Pimlico.
Yeah, and remember Telly's horse, Telly's Pop.
That's right, from Kojak's Lollipop.
Yeah.
That's right. There you go. Good job, Sid. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale and, of course, Work Thoroughbred Consultants. And the breeding season pretty much wrapped up. Probably a few more covers yet to come. We're going to turn around. We got a lot to do, actually, Case. We got to get on it here. I'm in trouble, as usual. Let's get to Chris Hyde. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, yesterday, a coalition of equine industry and equine sport management organizations coming together to work toward the SAFE Act's passage in Congress. And Chris is going to update us. Chris is known as Animal Lobbyists on Twitter. And his consulting firm and his lobbying firm is Blue Marble. And he's been with us steadily the last few years as these attempts to get legislation through to absolutely end the legality of exporting horses out of the country for slaughter, and notably Mexico and Canada. And we've come so close. So anxious for Chris to provide the latest update and what the action plan is going to be to get this version of the SAFE Act through. Chris Hyde joins us now. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
No, not at all. Needed to get you back in the wake of yesterday's press release and the coordinated efforts of Jockey Club and the U.S. Trotting Association and countless others. Bring us up to speed on how things are going to proceed and why it can be different to get this version of the SAFE Act passed.
Yeah, no, thanks. I think I'm really excited about this, the press release that you mentioned, and it's up on returntofreedom.org for people to see. It's because this is when we were so successful for before, when we had really, you know, great leadership from within the racing community, you know, stepping up and showing that this is the right thing to do. So I'm really excited about bringing all these people back together. And especially so because they're all going to be very proactive. I mean, that's the really nice thing. It's not just they're putting their name on this statement and calling for action, which is great, but they're also kind of helping us, you know, in Washington and reaching out. So I think it's risen to being a really, you know, everybody's realizing, you know, now's the opportunity, and it's a really good chance to get this thing done. So I think it's exciting bringing all these new fresh, you know, people and voices to the effort. So it's I'm looking forward to it.
Explain two things. What you know, what the process is going to be, and what stopped us last year from getting over the goal line.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've already been laying the groundwork this year. The we have to get out of two committees, basically. We've got the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House of Representatives, which is where that version of the bill sits. And in the Senate, it's sitting in the Senate Judiciary Committee. You know, I'm excited. The chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee is from New Jersey. He's got some great tracks there who are on this letter and supportive of the effort to ban slaughter. And, you know, we've done some meetings with him to raise this awareness, and he's, you know, signaled that he's very behind it, didn't realize kind of the, you know, the problem with where it's sitting and all of those kinds of things. So we've been having good talks with the committee. So really the hope is to get a hearing in the subcommittee, which is the first step of the process. And actually, the subcommittee chair is Representative Jan Schakowsky from Illinois, and it's her bill, the SAFE Act. She is the sponsor of the SAFE Act. So we, you know, we have the hearing in her subcommittee. It then goes to the full committee of Energy and Commerce in the House, which is where they kind of they vote. It's not really a hearing, but it's called a markup, and they vote on it, and then they send it to the floor. And we've got more than enough votes in the House to pass it. You need 218 votes in the House of Representatives to pass a bill. We've got 215 confirmed co-sponsors, and I know there's at least 20 or 30, you know, that they're on the committee, they don't co-sponsor, but they'll vote. So we're well over the 218. You know, so a lot of focus is on the Senate, and I think this is really where, you know, bringing all of the industry groups, and, you know, we're hoping to get more. You know, this is open to any, you know, any other industry groups to come on from all the other disciplines as well, and kind of convince the Senate to move a hearing. And that's, you know, the Senate's a lot more difficult. You need to get 60 votes in the Senate to pass anything now, unfortunately. It used to be just the simple majority, but now there's always somebody blocking every bill. So when they do that, you have to get 60. You know, obviously our task is a lot more difficult in the Senate, but I think with all of these guys behind it, Senator McConnell from Kentucky has always signaled his support for this issue, Senator Schumer. So, you know, I'm hoping if we can get it out of the House and then it shows a good sign of faith to the Senate, you know, that we can figure out a way to get it through the Senate, because there's always ways. We just need to kind of use that muscle to do it.
Chris, is it something that would be considered standalone, or is it something that's going to be tacked on in some, you know, mini omnibus style?
Yeah, I would assume, well, in the House, they can do a standalone because, you know, there's really no way to, they don't block things necessarily in the Senate or in the House. So I think, you know, if showing that we've gotten it out of committee, showing we've gotten the at least 215 confirmed, they'll know we have 218. So it's hoping what I'm hoping in the House, you can do what's called suspension calendar. And that's where they put bills that they think nobody will really have a problem. They don't need to come out and debate it. You know, they'll kind of just call it up, and if nobody objects, they'll just, you know, pass it through. So that's what we're hoping on in the House. You know, now again, the Senate's, you know, a lot more of a difficult beast because it only takes one member to block it or object, and then that starts the whole process. So I'm assuming in the Senate we're going to have to find some vehicle, as you mentioned, kind of, you know, to tack it on to with that. But again, there, you know, there are bills that, you know, they want to pass before the end of the year. And so hopefully, if again, if we can get leadership and get the committees behind it, you know, that I think they may say, I'm hoping, oh, I'm tired of this bill. Let's get it out of, you know, get it off the docket. We've been dealing with this for 20 years. There's everybody behind it. You know, so that's somewhat of the hope in the Senate. And I, you know, I think we just need to keep building that momentum. And I think this letter's doing it.
What specifically stopped it last year?
I think it was the lack of momentum. You know, we had, well, this actually 2 years ago. We're in the second session of this Congress, which goes 2 years. Last Congress, it went in, we had a subcommittee hearing, but I think it was just lack of focus. It was, you know, nobody pushed to get a full committee hearing, which is what you need to get it out. So there wasn't this kind of concerted effort behind it. You know, which is what we haven't had until the late John Hettinger and, you know, back in the old days when we, you know, we had a lot of the racing pushing it. You know, we kind of had that constant effort. And we didn't really have that 2 years ago or even, you know, many years before that. And so now I think with all this renewed attention, that's the hope, is to show them that this is something everybody wants. Well, I can't be naive. I'm sure there's one or two up there that don't like it. But again, you know, they can't dictate, you know, policy for the majority. We need to get this thing done, and they can vote against it. So I think that's the difference, is now there, you know, there's momentum. We've got, you know, had good outreach to the chairman. You know, we've got all these great groups coming out. There's more groups that are going to come out supporting, and there's attention to it. So I think that's the big difference, this Congress, than the last one. And that's the positive sign.
How then do you want to see the public react? Should we focus our effort on our senators, or do we have to make this a bicameral approach ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's about, again, as I've alluded to, the Senate's going to be the tough, that's always the tougher lift, and that's the way everything was set up. I mean, the House does 3,000 bills a year, and the Senate does a couple hundred. And that was built by intention, is to have the Senate kind of slow down the enthusiasm of the House. But that doesn't mean, you know, we can't get things like this through, which are bipartisan. So, no, really, I think the full-on effort we need to get is keep it on the House and keep highlighting to the committee, keep highlighting to the chairman that this bill's important. You know, but that won't take our main focus, because he hears it. He's a good guy, Chairman Pallone. You know, I think the committee's solid on this thing. So I think he's good with it, as long as he keeps hearing from people, and this letter will do it. But it's the Senate, you know, because as he said, we need 51 at least to have them take this seriously, and I'd love to get 60, but I don't think that's happening. But if we get, you know, a lot of the major owners and tracks, and, you know, there's more associations, there's more racing associations that need to come on. I'd love the NTRA to come on to this. You know, because I know the new head of the NTRA, I've known him since I was a staffer in Senator Connie Mack's office many, many years ago. You know, I know he's anti-slaughter, so I'd love to get them on board with this. So I think once you keep building that, then it shows, you know, like with the racing integrity bill, you know, last Congress, you had that kind of critical mass of showing, you know, major public support, major welfare support, major industry support. You know, that they take it seriously and bring it up. And once you have that, you know, I think we can accomplish it in the Senate as well.
What do we all do? Where do we go to the form letters and to all the mechanics of communicating with our legislative representatives?
Yeah, I think the simplest thing to do is to go to returntofreedom.org. And on there, you can find all their social media, their Twitter and Instagram, which they post recently. But they've got a link on there that kind of gives you different things that you can do, because they're all important. A phone call to your member of Congress is important. A letter to your Congress is important. A handwritten letter is important. Plus, I think also, you know, what this letter does is it also makes them realize there's, you know, major business interest involved in wanting to pass this thing too. And so any of your listeners, you know, if, again, if you're, you know, more jockeys and more trainers and more owners that may know a member of Congress, that's usually always been our biggest success, is if you know a member of Congress or if you know a senator, you know, reach out to me. You know, my email's Chris, chris.cheehide@bluemarblestrategy.com, and we can, you know, move forward with that. But direct connections are also great, because then that member of Congress is hearing about this. It's, you know, it's not coming through a young staffer and getting passed up the chain. It's kind of coming directly to the member of Congress, and they're hearing it from a friend. So that's always a huge way to get access to members, to have them hear about an issue and know it's important. I think that's the big thing.
What is the timing, too, so that we can get everybody in, and I can get you back on a regular basis?
Yeah, I think that, well, the timing's quick, because while it's I had to stop and think what month it is. While it's May, you know, and this Congress ends basically at the end of December, and then we have to start all over again on January 1st or whenever the new Congress comes in the beginning of January. We have to introduce the bill again, get all the co-sponsors again. So we have basically from May till the end of December to get this done. And plus there's, I think somebody said about maybe 40-some legislative days within that whole window. So it's really critical. We've got to get it out of the committee in the House, because I think once we do that, you know, then we need to get it out of the House, and then we can put our focus all on the Senate, you know, where we're not kind of distracted in trying to get two bills passed. We need to get it out of the House immediately, and that can happen at any time. You know, they hold hearings, you know, on kind of mix-and-match bills on this kind of thing, and that's what I'm hoping this one, you know, once they've got some things that are just singular, they'll do a day of hearings and knock these things out. You know, then the House can pass it fairly quickly, but it's been the Senate where we need as much time as we can get to focus on them and to raise the awareness over there as well. So basically immediately is kind of the simple answer to stir up all of this as fast as possible.
Very good. Well, we will start with making sure that people, and I'll put all of these out, the links, returntofreedom.org, and there is the take action drop down menu, and if you hit oppose slaughter, there's the mechanism to contact your legislators. Chris is available. C Hyde, and it's spelled unusually. HEYDE is Chris's email. CHEYDE@bluemarble.com. So reach out to Chris if you particularly have access to a senator or a Congress critter. And as Charlie
Pierce. I like that. I haven't thought of that name.
That's Charlie Pierce. He's got the trademark on Congress critter. I give in to Charlie's brilliance. He's also a huge racing fan, the big time. So we're going to keep the pressure on, Chris, if it means weekly visits and updates.
Awesome.
All right?
No, I appreciate it. And that's the hope. I think this is the big push. I'm really excited. So, yeah, I appreciate that. And it's bluemarblestrategy.com.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't get the strategy.
That's okay. Yeah, and I'm happy to talk to anybody or anybody has questions on this. Again, we're looking for more names to add to the letter, you know, more industry groups and, you know, trainers, because we had a letter like this many years ago with all of the Derby winner trainers and owners and, you know, even more jockeys and all that kind of stuff. So we're happy to keep building that, and I'm looking at other industries, hunter jumper, polo, all that kind of stuff, because now it's time to everybody to stand up for the horse. So I appreciate it, Steve.
No, we'll get you back on a regular basis to get this done. And we were so close last year, we've got to see this through and put an end. This is a scourge, and it had closing the borders puts an end to it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's not like there hasn't been successes. That includes, you know, the end of slaughter in this country, when the USDA ceased to make themselves available to inspect. You can't have a slaughter plant if there's no USDA inspection. And that was the way we ended it domestically. Now it's a question of, you know, not only is there the horror over the border, even the transport to the border is a absolute shonder. And So everybody has to get behind this, and we're not even asking for money. We're asking just for, you know, just for some action. And a lot of the groundwork is laid for you by people like Chris and the team at Return to Freedom. If you go to Return to Freedom's website, they also are very involved in the Wild Horse, in the Mustang programs, and keeping checks on the BLM, mm-hmm. or their own problem. That's a pet peeve of mine too.
That's Chris, a whole other show, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll bring in Deanne Stillman for that too.
There you go.
We've got a circle of friends, and everybody in the racing industry should be part of this. It doesn't take, we're not asking for a lot, can make a huge difference.
Really, it can. And we're heading into an election year, which is what I've been pointing out to people. So when you're going to your town hall meeting or you're starting to consider who do we need to elect to Congress, think about that on, you know, who is good on horse issues, on, you know, who's good for the welfare, on any aspect of this, you know, when you start looking for candidates. And that's really how we're going to change kind of the attitude towards Congress and our elected officials, is to start electing. And it's a bipartisan issue. You know, people always ask me, we've had great Republicans and horrible Democrats on this thing and vice versa. You know, it's really kind of the person. And I think, you know, they just start need to hearing from their constituents that horses are, you know, a issue that they will vote on, you know, on how members are. And usually if you're good on horses or good on welfare, you're probably a pretty decent person, you know, ultimately. So I need to keep that stuff in mind as we move forward as well.
Chris Hyde, everybody. You can follow Chris if you aren't already. Animal Lobbyists is his Twitter handle. Chris, thanks so much. We'll talk as soon as next week.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Chris Hyde, everybody. And the end of slaughter is in reach, clearly. And it won't take but a few extra senators to come along. I'll reserve commentary until we get a better handle on you know who may be a problem in this arena. Going to be joined by John Dooley for a few minutes. I do want to get in John because there is the first nice stakes card of the year at Horseshoe Indianapolis, the Caesars Day, and we'll get a couple of opinions and a nice look ahead to this afternoon's action. It starts at 2:30 Eastern, and the stakes sequence starts in the 6th at 5:05 with the Sagamore. There's the two sired races for the 3-year-old boys and the 3-year-old girls. Then there's the Horseshoe and the Caesars, both turf miles for males and females. John Dooley, good morning.
Hey, good morning from Indianapolis. Looking forward to the big Caesars Stakes Day 2022 here at Horseshoe Indianapolis, Steve.
There's a lot going on, too. There's the free contest for a $2,500 in prize money. This is really a fun day, and, you know, it's Wednesday.
Yeah, and part of, Caesars Entertainment also today benefits Empire Hope for, thoroughbred aftercare. So an important cause. So really looking forward to fans coming out here to the races. And at least as of this morning, fast and firm from our track superintendent, Roy Smith. So keeping our fingers crossed weather-wise for a big day of racing.
Yeah, and you mentioned Roy, one of the most respected track supers in the game. This group, let's look at these four races. And you do have the all-stakes pick four, and mm-hmm. it starts in the 5th. These are the boys, the state bred group starts with the 6-5 favorite on the rail, right?
Mr. Chaos, he was such a dominant horse here last season during his juvenile campaign, and then came back with a flourish, making his first start of 2022 for Robert Dobbs, Rodney Prescott, three-time champion here at Horseshoe Indianapolis. So, you know, has speed, has the rail draw, and certainly the one to beat in the Sagamore.
You know, I do want to mention on that contest, The contest is races 4 through 9. You pick one horse. It's $2 across the board, Mythical Bankroll, and $2,500 in prize money. And I will retweet it again for everybody. And you can submit by 4 o'clock today, horseshoeindycontest@gmail.com. And why not? It's $2,500.
Yeah.
That's real money.
Caesar Stakes Legends Day. Yeah, I mean, you know, why not stake your claim for $2,500? You know, top six handicappers, you know, you win a share of that. First prize takes home $1,000. So, you know, a great day of racing and a chance for handicappers to prove their mettle, too.
One per person. The seventh race, this is the girls' version. 5.5 on the main, and there's quite a few familiar runners. A lot of them coming, you know, that are, you know, basically making seasonal debuts. Not unusual at this time, but there are a couple that have already got a start in since the meet started.
Yeah, I mean, among those, I mean, you know, veteran jockey John Court, he's on No Trust. It'll be, you know, her second start of, you know, 2022 for Mike Bauer. And it's one of those horses, Steve, you know, pretty much, I mean, we've run a lot of sprint races at the meet so far, you know, of course, kicked off back in April. So this is the first, you know, full month of the season. But, you know, you've wanted to be either on the lead or showing that stalking ability. And No Trust kind of fits, you know, that category. And, you know, and in veteran hands. And, you know, Lexi Sun also, you know, benefits from a race over the track. Sammy Bermudez, boy, he's just been riding, you know, lights out. Last race week, he had six winners, three riding doubles, had a win here to kick off the week. So nobody hotter here than Sammy Bermudez, Marvin Johnson combination. You can't go wrong there with Lexi Sun, who has the speed and figures to lead.
Ron Raper brings back acutely in here the four with Deshaun Parker, and certainly that race in September, that allowance win. This was a filly that was pretty good at two, and if she has any, frankly, any normal development from September to May, acutely at 5-1 is interesting. And I'll go out to the 10, second off the layoff for Joe Davis, who's looking for his first win of the year from the, you know, just a handful of starters. But Flirty Dancer is going to get a dry fast track, and I at 20-1, I would not discount Flirty Dancer as part of this picture.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if, you know, any type of percolating speed duel develops, you know, even those horses that might be keen, you know, coming off a layoff like acutely. Vital Victory, another, you know, she's making her first run of 2022. You know, you have to overcome that outside post, though. I mean, it's been more advantageous to draw inside in these sprints. That's far at Horseshoe Indianapolis. So, you know, Flirty Dancer is going to have to, you know, overcome that. But, you know, back, you know, with talking about acutely, Deshaun Parker, he wrote a winner here this week. He's now only 12 wins away from 6,000 career wins. So we're kind of keeping our eye on, you know, Deshaun on his march to 6,000 wins and maybe acutely. I mean, she showed that ability out last season at Horseshoe Indianapolis and certainly, you know, well-meant making her first run of this year.
Well, the two open company races, the Horseshoe and the Caesars, $150,000 each, the flat turf mile, and these are the filly race is really strong. What'd you come up with in here?
Yep, you know, I'm kind of leaning. You know, I mean, I've always been a big fan of you know, those Kitten Joys and, you know, Bravo Kitten. You know, kind of 3-1 mm-hmm. on the morning line. You know, Paco Lopez coming in to ride for Mike Deeney. You know, the two horse, A Little Love and Luck. But, you know, kind of keeping our eyes on the skies. I mean, fortunately now we're, you know, fast and firm. But, you know, some rain in the forecast kind of around the afternoon hours. So really hoping it, you know, that we can, yeah, hoping that Shelbyville can kind of, you know, dodge a real weather bullet. I mean, some light showers, okay, we can deal with that. But, you know, really looking forward to this with, you know, a lot of different, you know, riders coming in town, including, you know, Irad Ortiz on Lalloping for Brad Cox, who's had success in the Horseshoe Indianapolis Stakes with a couple of wins.
The fourth of the four stakes, the Caesars, and these are the three-year-old boys. You've got a 2-1 favorite in Tommy B for Brad Cox. Brad actually has a filly in the eighth, Laloping, who is 5-1, and Irad Ortiz got named. I don't think Irad flew out, although he are the changes up? I'm curious, actually.
Yeah, no, I'm still waiting to get all the, usually around 1 o'clock is the time that I get the call from a clerk of scale. So a lot of times I'm, waiting with bated breath for the phone to ring for the clerk of scale, you know, just after 1 o'clock. Usually I'm in the middle of eating my pork tenderloin sandwich from the clubhouse. It's really good here. Yeah. And, Craig will call up with all the changes and rider changes and whatnot. So, you know, kind of standing by for that. But, you know, I remember Steve, you know, I mean, of course, you know, having spent 22 years up at Arlington, some great winners of the Caesar Stakes. I can remember, you know, Silver Max back in 2012, but you know, you go down the list.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Tom Proctor, Chris Block, Dale Romans, Mike Maker, Bill Mott, you know, Josie Carroll, Chris Hartman, Brad Cox won it last year with Royal Prince. So, you know, a really distinguished conditioners list having won this race, and really looking forward to the one race number nine here today, the Caesar Stakes.
It's a nice stake card, and still just getting going. The season's still in its early stages with John Dooley at the mic. Looking forward to it later, John. I appreciate the visit, and we'll kind of catch up when we talk next week. Kind of get our first real in-depth snapshot at the first month of the meet.
Yeah, and excited for the card today, and then we have no live racing on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but our fans can go to the OTB here. Looking forward to, of course, the Black Eye Susan and the Preakness Stakes. Epicenter, Louisiana Derby winner, of course. The coach is a secret. Also, best to my friend Dave Rodman, calling there from Old Hilltop. Dave, I know he always gets excited for the Preakness Stakes call 2022.
John Dooley, everybody. That's it. Hi-ho.
Hi-ho. Hi-ho.
Look at you, John Dooley, everybody. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Cheers.
John Dooley, folks, and Horseshoe Indianapolis today. Nice. It's a nice sequence. And, of course, it's opening day at Canterbury as well. And a pretty big Wednesday of action. Let's take the break. Top of the hour, Sean Clancy standing by, probably getting impatient. He's probably outside watering the Christmas tree. We'll get an update now that it's spring. Sean Clancy joins us next to fet undoubtedly his brother, who receives the Old Hilltop Award tomorrow. Back after this, Hour 3, Chris Katulak in a little bit as well, and Seth Merrow.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Horsemen, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade II Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Elks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238. Or go to hollywoodpnrc.com/racing.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse